Welcome to the Tour Coach here in 2023, another year of the stories, the conversations, the roundtable discussions that come from my travels on the PGA and the Korn Ferry Tours, along with my teaching down at Old Palm and Palm Beach Gardens, or here in my studio in Mobile, Alabama. These are the stories and the guests and the people that I run into that I bring to you to help you enjoy playing the game of golf, learning about the game of golf, or learning how to teach the game of golf. I hope you'll enjoy my travels, my conversations, and you enjoy being on this journey with me. But I also want to remind you that this journey and bringing it to you wouldn't be possible without a special thanks to our longtime sponsors. First and foremost, Strixon and Cleveland Golf, Vineyard Vines, Bushnell Golf, and Buick GMC. Without those, the Tour Coach and all these travels wouldn't be possible. Wouldn't be possible to bring these conversations to you. I hope you'll enjoy sitting in with me on another version here of the Tour Coach.
Hi, so joining me now on the Tour Coach is Michael Neff with Gear Sports. Michael, I got to tell everybody, I was, I'd known about Gears for a good while. I did some, I used it a few times over the years. Went to Sea Island once with a player, and down at Doral, had used it a few times with some of our retreats. And I, as I explained to you, like, I'm kind of, I'm very old school, real simple. Don't try to get too technical, complicated, but I've been kind of easing my way into the 3D pool, okay?
Yeah, the opportunity
to come, because I've got a belief, like, I should never teach something I don't understand. And I'm not sure that everybody's like that with some of the stuff that's out there, and we'll get into that. But
I think that's why
I was blown away by the stuff that I got to watch you and JP, Justin Parsons, do. Because I found that the technology actually reinforced and some of the things that I saw and thought, and you could actually measure some of the stuff you were doing. So I want to talk a little bit about what you and JP were doing, and I want to also get in. Well, let's start with, how the heck did you get into doing what you're doing with Gears, and how did you get to where you are?
Well, first of all, Tony, thank you for having me and giving me a chance to kind of tell the story of Gears. And I'm also thankful to have met you, and I learned a lot from you. Just, you know, the three of us there just sitting around the, with JP, just kind of sitting around studying this stuff. I found it was really helpful. So first of all, thank you for having me, and thank you for, I'm grateful that we're friends now, long, and look forward to working with you.
We're going to do plenty. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So I'm from Portland, Oregon. I've been a PGA member for almost 30 years now. And, about, I don't know, maybe like 17 years ago. So I need to actually go back and look at this, but, I started working, one of my friends worked for TaylorMade. And yeah. TaylorMade had this, had just started this new 3D system, started working with a new 3D system called the Matt system. And yeah. Maybe some of your listeners might remember that. They had one at the Kingdom down in Atlanta. Yeah. They had, you know, we had probably like 70 or 80 systems globally.
I used to go use the one with Tim Breon at Greystone.
There you go. Tim Breon's one of my good buddies. He's with Foresight now. He had it at Greystone. And that's kind of where I got my start. I had won this award for selling the most golf clubs in the state of Oregon from Titleist. And one of my friends kind of who worked for TaylorMade is like, hey, dude, you got to come down here and check out what we're doing. And I went down there, and they just started the Matt system. And one of my good friends, current, still very close friend of mine, who I still talk to all the time, who works for Mitsubishi now, his name's Will Miele. And he was running the Kingdom at that time, or he was running the Matt system at the Kingdom at that time, I think, really more what was really happening. And I just kind of fell in love with it. And I thought to myself, this is what I've been waiting for, you know, some kind of really, you know, something to kind of explain what I was seeing. And that was really my big first introduction to 3D, was just like, I could not, there were so many questions that I had of, like, is that really happening? People would say things to me like, you need to swing more left. And I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean? And how much do I need to swing left? And what needs to swing left? And so my mind just started really racing. And I finally thought, But at the time, TaylorMade really only wanted to use that product for instruction, or for fitting, not instruction. And I actually thought it was, at the time, I thought this is a better instructional tool than it is a fitting tool. But TaylorMade is selling golf clubs, and they're not teaching lessons. And, you know, so that's kind of where that whole, and then my mind kind of got really interested. And we started TaylorMade Performance Labs, and we sold a lot of millions and millions of dollars worth of golf clubs using the MAT system. And the company that made that product is a company called Motion Reality, Inc. And they got a contract with the military, the U.S. government, to do kind of a military application to 3D. And so they would literally use the system and simulate, you know, like that's a pretty common thing that our kids now, they're playing these simulation games. And it's like, yeah, that, you know, 15, 20 yeah. years ago, they were kind of the pioneers of this. But they were, and so they basically went into this, hey, we need to focus on military because there's way more money in that. And, you know, we're not going to focus any more attention on golf. So they basically stopped supporting the golf system, the MAT system. I happened to write a book on called Drive Like the Pros about it. And it was basically using the MAT system to kind of discover, you know, we had all these avatars and all this data from touring professionals on the MAT system. And I was like, hey, this is what they do. This is what the average tour player does, or the average player does. This is what the tour player does. And these things started to start to make sense to me, and started figuring out, you know, hey, what's cause and effect? What's really happening under the hood? And I think that's where I kind of got my start, where I really wanted to understand what was really going wrong or right, and what would happen if I did such and such. If I flexed my wrist more, how does that affect the swing path? If I threw the club, or felt like I threw the club, or got the club more out in front of me, what does that do to the path? What does that do to the body data? And how does that affect the wrists? And how does that affect the shoulders? And I started just putting all these pieces together, and then the company basically stopped supporting it. So I'm like, okay, now we don't have a 3D system. They had the AMM system was kind of coming out about that time. And that was an inertial system that Titleist used. And I think K-Vest is kind of a child of that system. Phil Cheatham built that product. I'm not sure exactly all the branches that came off of the AMM system, but the AMM system is an accurate system. You'll recognize that it's an inertial system or a magnetic system, where basically there was these cables strapped to each of the joints, and you would digitize the joints, and the cables were strapped to the club. And then there was, there was this big, heavy kind of thing right at the base of the grip. And they have these cables on all over you. And, it gives you body data, and it gives you some club data. It doesn't give you any shaft information or head information, but it gave you like how much the grip was twisting, how much the club was twisting, like called handle twist velocity. And it was giving grip speed and twist velocity. And then it was giving a bunch of body data. But I felt that was incomplete. And a lot of the 3D experts, Tony, did you have an AMM system, or were you educated on the AMM system?
No. So, you know, my...
Well, that's like... JP West.
My first foray or venture into 3D was K-Vest, okay?
Yeah.
And they break to me. This is not... But, like, you know, I found, like, I'm not a rocket scientist, okay? But there were things where I felt like, and we'll go into this later about other things, like I feel like if I'm telling a really good player, a tour player, this stuff, right, like it should be as accurate as it could be.
Yep.
Okay. And there were times that I felt like there was huge differences in some of the readings. Okay, and they were great. They treated me great, all that.
Sure.
But I actually thought their best feature of the whole thing was the biofeedback where you could set some things.
Yeah.
I thought for training it was good. But anyway, so that was where I went with that. And then so I haven't had used 3D since then. I've used it down at Doral some. I picked JP's brain a bunch.
Sure.
Kind of where we are. I've always used force plates. You and I talked about that.
Yeah.
That was a big picture. I teach a lot of rotation. I bought the second swing catalyst in the United States. So, I've always been intrigued by stuff. But
sure.
I've been, probably because of, it isn't cheap to get a Gears and so on and so forth and have the space. But and also I didn't know as much about it. So that's why when JP called me and said, like, hey, he was telling me this stuff. And I was like, man, if you don't mind, I'd love to come over. And he was like, no, I'd love
to. Check that out.
Yeah.
That's the sign of a good pro, somebody that's, like, really willing to learn. And I am still in that mode right now. I want to learn, man. I need to understand. There's so many things that we don't measure consistently that are,
right.
There's so many things in a golf swing that we need to understand why. And you can make the argument like, oh, just get up and hit it. And pros don't really know what's going on. Well,
yeah.
there's a reason why, the tour is so deep right now. And it wasn't 50 years ago. The technology wave, I'm sorry to say to those golf pros that just think, hey, technology is just, it's, it doesn't matter. It just matters how you get the ball in the hole, the field game to me. I mean, there's those are parts of it, but you can't ignore the importance of what technology has done to our game in the last, 15 years, with the invention of the launch monitor has changed the golf industry big time. And there's never been more good players ever in the world. The college players nowadays are so much better than they were when I was playing college golf. It's not even close. I mean, it's unbelievable how good this generation coming up is. And I really believe a lot of that has to do with the amount of technology that's out right now, and frankly the invention of the launch monitor, which started with pretty much Henry Johnson or Henry Flight Scope Henry oh my gosh, he's gonna kill me. I'm so sorry. We're on. It was the inventor of Flight Scope. And then TrackMan came shortly after FlightScope and has done a very good job of marketing. And that mm-hmm. really has changed the way that we understand how a golf club is delivered to the ball. And back to my original AMM discussion, AMM was a big part of that too. And the mat system was not a huge part of that because it was really only being used for club fitting.
Right.
But the AMM system really... a lot of the high-end golf professionals today, I would call high-end, maybe I should rephrase that. A lot of the guys and girls that I think really have a super good feeling for, like, the JPs of the world, somebody that's like, really understands how the joints are working and how the body's moving. You find a lot of those guys and they're all over the place in Australia. Australia has to be the ground zero of really good understanding of golf swing measurement. But I think that the AMM system was a big part of that. And it's a little clunky. The cabling is kind of heavy. The thing that you put on the golf club, the little marker that you put on the golf club is heavy, so it's really hard to simulate exactly what the player is feeling in any 3D environment. So that's where I was a little bit kind of like, okay, well, do I go down this kind of magnetic road or do I stay down the optical road? And the mat system was an optical tracking system, just like they make the movies today and, how they do gait analysis at hospitals. Optical motion capture has been around for a while, but it's in particular what Gears does, it's the mat system, it's optical tracking, infrared tracking of that reflective marker.
Okay.
And that is the, and like you said, the downside of optical tracking is you need a building, you need a room, or you need tripods, you need several cameras.
Yeah.
Minimum of 8 cameras, pretty much 9 cameras sometimes, depending on what you're trying to do. But you need the cameras to surround you if you really want to get a true 3D rendering. But the MAT system was the only system that had body and club. So the AMM's 3D system or K-Vest or any other 3D products, they were really just body only, and they didn't give the full picture of what was happening. And what the MAT system did was it tracked the club and it tracked the body. And that combination was where my foundation and where my belief structure has come from. And I think that is, you take a kid like me who has pretty good ADD going, who barely graduated from high school, who probably shouldn't have graduated from college, and did so by the skin of my teeth, that has no real education in any kind of mathematics or any kind of human biology or physiology or, you know, biochemistry. I didn't have anything like that. In fact, I was horrible at it. But if you just sit and stare at a 3D model golf swing and you capture the best players in the world, you know, for the last 20 years, like I have, anybody, in fact, most of the guys that are my customers who are really sharp, now they take this information and it just kind of adds, it really blows them up. But I think
the thing I loved about it compared to others was the stuff I learned watching you, it was tying the club and the body and what the body did and what the club is.
Right. So if you kind of think about that, like the only way to track a golf club, so the problem with the MAT system, one was TaylorMade did not, what's that?
No, I was going to say, like, you know, for instance, like if you continue to rotate your chest going back, how that affects what your left arm, if you're out,
sure,
affects the left arm and those things. And but then what it does to the face and what it does to the club. So I found that, I think if you want to have an accurate picture, you got to be able to have both.
See the whole thing. So that was the problem that we had with the MAT system was, number one, TaylorMade didn't want to use it for instruction. They made too much money off of it, off of club sales. So they really pushed it hard just for selling clubs. And it was, at the time, the best club tracking system in the world. The problem with it was only 110 frames per second. So the cameras were not very fast. And once you get at 110 frames per second, full frame, that's HD, those cameras were at about a little over 400 DPI. So you didn't get a very good megapixel reading of that marker. And the camera itself was very limited. But once you got over about 110 miles per hour, that system really started to conk. Like you started to see some degradation in the data. Once you got into that 100, you know, a little over 100 miles per hour, anything under 110 miles per hour, it was very accurate. There was no shaft data though, with the MAT system. And we did not know any of the bulge and roll or any of the face mapping was not hyper accurate because we had to use the ball to find the club. And once we found the ball, that when we calibrated the club, we had a pretty good face mapping idea. And I would say we were probably a, 2 to 3 millimeter deviation on that, which is pretty good, but it's not optimal. You know, in a golf place, a three millimeter differential is on a robot, depending if it's a driver or an iron, is, you know, that can be up to 30 yards. You know, I mean, it can really move the ball. So knowing where the ball touches the face was a problem. Knowing what the bulge and roll of the club was a problem. Knowing what the shaft was doing was a problem. And anything over 110 miles per hour, we started to lose degradation. So when the company stopped using that system, when TaylorMade stopped using that system, I saw an opportunity and I went to a company called Natural Point, which is in Corvallis, Oregon, who happened to be kind of the up and coming optical motion capture system. Ping. There's a company called Vicon, who was the largest motion capture, optical motion capture company in the world. And they developed a system called the Enzo system, which some of your buyers may, or some of your listeners may have heard of. But the Enzo system, they sold two of them, one to Ping and one to Fujikura. And they sold them for $250,000 each. And they basically stopped making it because nobody would buy it. It was too expensive.
Right.
It was clunky, very accurate. The cameras were faster. And even Ping to this day uses it today. And Fuji, I think, still uses it today. And the software is absolutely awful, but it's accurate. It's accurate. And the people that that worked for Vicon were hired. Many of the people that made that product, the two in particular guys that made that product for Vicon, were hired by Natural Point in Oregon. And they're the ones, and basically over a couple of years, I was the first one to invest into creating a Gears product. We call it Gears for Golf Evaluation and Research System. And I up to that point, I'd sold like 80 mat systems globally, kind of as a contractor for TaylorMade, if you will, for selling golf clubs. So I made a lot of good friends over the years down that road, but I knew there was weaknesses, and I knew that we needed to improve it. So we created the gear system with Natural Point in Oregon, and it did not go very well. In fact, we went to the first show, and it didn't work. And we had three or four people that wanted to buy it. We said, and the owner of Natural Point that said time said, "No, we're not doing it. I'm done. I don't want to spend any more money on this." And their main business was in technologies and like customers like Lucasfilms and Activision and Microsoft, and they were making money that way. And he's like, I don't want to lose any more money on this. So I came in and said, okay, let's finish this project. I'm going to get TaylorMade to sign up on this thing. Just let me run with this thing and I'll make it happen. And so they handed over, basically, Natural Point gave me the reins of Gears. And my number one thing was I wanted exclusivity. I didn't want anybody else selling it. I was the only one that got to sell it. I got to develop it. And so we basically found some programmers independent of Natural Point to kind of finish off the product and make it what it is today. And so we've got a couple hundred systems globally. We're in, it's a small little company. We have captured, I think roughly 500 touring professionals globally now. And, the only one that we really haven't got that I really want to get is Tiger. Hopefully we'll get him someday, but we've got Rory and Ron and DJ and Cam Smith and Tony. We've got a bunch of guys. So
it's crazy.
That's how we did it. We basically just been selling systems. We have more systems outside of the U.S. now than we do inside the U.S. But the main difference is that we got a new camera that's 240 frames per second. We are research grade accurate up to about 165 miles per hour club head speed. So once we got the frame rate up, then we could start measuring it more accurately. Our face mapping is 0.2 millimeters, which is the thickness of a piece of paper. And we now know what the shaft is doing, deflection, droop, and twist. So we're measuring the shaft very accurately. We actually bought the algorithm from AMM, Phil Cheatham's algorithm, and we have all of his, that math that he created inside of Gears for the 6 degrees of freedom to know what the, you know, sway, thrust, lift, turn bend, and side bend of each of the major joints. And we've been packing it on, and currently we're the only product right now in the world, only 3D product that gives body and club data at the same time. And I think that's the real story here, you know, to where we can move on in this conversation.
I agree. So I want to ask you a couple things. Got about 10 minutes or so left. Unbelievable story, right? And like, I've been following you for a while, especially Tim Breon's first person that ever brought your name up to me. Yeah. And what are three or four things that you have found through all the testing, like that good players do, that maybe we don't know? Or what are some things that you're seeing, trends that the best players in the world, you talk about putting the Rorys. I saw some of the Rory stuff on there when I was with you, Rahm's, all these great players. What are some of the things you're finding that they do that maybe, that isn't always, you can't necessarily see from a force plate or you can't see from a camera, those types of things?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I would say that I have yet to see one tour player have the same information. So if you look at it from that viewpoint, nobody has anything in common. Mm-hmm. So it depends on how you define what common is.
Okay.
So I like to say that there's windows of success that every tour player does, and the women are a little different than the men, but we have so much tour data now, and I've spent the hardest thing I've done is, strap myself to an airplane and, millions of miles on an airplane flying around the world capturing touring professionals, which is pretty much my job. If you look at it from anything at the high level, it's just to get as much data from the best players in the world as possible.
Don't worry,
I would say that there's a lot of things that are similar, like how much they sway and how much they turn, and but there's a couple of things that might be kind of hard to see with the naked eye or on a video camera that I have come to find. One is that if you were looking face on at a golfer, and you were to take the center of their torso and the center of their pelvis, and you were looking face on at them, every touring professional, with the exception of John Rahm, that we have captured with an iron or a driver, from the top of their swing, or some people call that position four, if you go through the positions, at the top of the swing, from the top of the swing to left arm parallel, so from position four to five, the torso gets on top or in front of the pelvis.
Yep.
So with that, and John Rahm, he has a short right leg, and I don't know if he uses lifts or his upper body, and you can argue, he's like the one guy that really doesn't do it. He's pretty close to doing it. I'm not saying, but the upper body really at no point in his swing ever gets in front of the lower body. And people say, well, driver two, I'm like, driver two, everyone, some more than others, but everybody kind of gets that upper body from position four to five, gets their centers on top of each other or in front of each other. And if you look at Tony, I'll ask you this question, Tony, where do most tour players get their max peak vertical force? So at what position does that happen?
Somewhere around halfway down, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So somewhere in that five or six area. Well, there's no coincidence that happens to also be the same place where almost every tour player has their centers on top of each other, at that transition, kind of in that loading from transition down to that last parallel. And then they reverse those, right? So you'll see that those centers kind of reverse. That's one thing that they all have in common. So in other words, the world, and we don't really see this, but there was a time when I was in college where the X Factor came out, where you had to get this huge upper body turn and there was tons of sway, right? So you needed a big X Factor. And I'll never forget this. I've tried this a million times. Maybe some of your listeners have, but I would sway my upper body trying to get as much turn as I could. And I started hitting like more chunks and more drop kicks and more hooks and block fades than I've ever had in my life. So I remember my upper body was getting, when I was trying to get that big stretch factor, my upper body was moving off the ball so much that I could never get back to it. And I was actually losing power. So even though I got a big stretch factor, I never was able to load that. I was never able to use the ground or to load into the ground to push against it at the right timing. So that vertical force was happening way too early. And I never really got, you never really got pressure on the ground. The other thing that most tour players, Rory's really the only exception to this, is that with a driver and iron, most tour players have no thrust. And most of them, the average tour player actually has negative thrust. And what thrust is that if you're looking straight down on a player, it's moving towards or away from the ball. So thrust would be moving toward the ball. And I'm specifically talking about the torso here. The average, one of your things that your average listener is going to do is on the downswing or on the backswing, they will thrust. They'll take the club back inside and they will actually move toward the ball. Almost all of your listeners are standing way too far away from the ball. And that's another thing that I'd say is in common, is that tour players stand way closer to the ball than the average amateur. Like, not even close. It's like, I put people inside the avatar all the time and say, closer, 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 there. And they're like, holy crap, Rory stands this close to the ball? Are you kidding me? I'm like, nope. And that's the truth. That's honestly, that's the truth. That you'd be surprised at how close tour players stand to the ball. So they thrust, back to the thrust conversation, they basically, tour players don't move the center of their pelvis toward the ball at any point. Rory does a little bit on his driver from the top of the swing to impact. He has about an inch of thrust. And he's really the only, and he's one of the best drivers in the game. But he's also probably the most into out and up. Him and Bryson probably are the most into out and up guys out there that are playing. You know, so that I think if you do a lot of excessive that, you're going to get a little bit of thrust. But with his irons, he doesn't do that. So, but average tour players actually have negative thrust, so they basically don't move their pelvis towards the ball. Another thing that they do is there's a huge variety of how much the club at left arm parallel, or excuse me, at last parallel. Most amateurs don't do this, but at last parallel, meaning P6, where the club is parallel to the ground right prior to impact, the tour player's torso is about level. And most amateurs have their torso pointing away from the target about 10 to 12 degrees. And almost every tour player, I've yet to see any real tour players that have a negative, you know, or that have their chest. Some of them are actually open, but that last parallel, the hips and the torso, the hips are probably on average with the driver 20 degrees open and the torso is right around level, at last parallel. There's tour players like Matt Fitzpatrick, who's super cupped. There's tour players that are really bowed or flexed, like Colin Morikawa. So that's all over the place. I mean, the tour players, there's nobody has anything in common with wrist angles. It's like all over the place.
Yeah.
Even like if you look at Matt Fitzpatrick, I mean, and Tony Finau is another one who like really late cupped, like they're kind of cupped with that lead wrist pretty late. But then they unload it really fast towards the ball. And I'd say the average slicer kind of has their cup and they do it too long that they don't know how to unload it or to release that properly. Mm-hmm. And so they end up not releasing it and that the face stays open. But there's tour player, the data on that is all over the place. I mean, so that's something that nobody has in common.
That's I love. And like I see, you said, I'm a big pivot. And I bought a swing catalyst way back, you know, because I had some guys getting better, and I always taught them to turn back, turn through. I was trying to make a living, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I'll never forget. I was at a Champions Tour event, hanging out where I was working. Tom Kite was there. He sat down at my computer, and I watched him hit a few. But anyways, he pulled everybody up like all these models, and he'd run them to impact, and all these great ball strikers, if he drew a line, their rib cage was right on top of the ball, right? Their sternum. Yeah. And he'd talk about releasing the sternum through or whatever, you know. And I was like, so I went and bought a swing catalyst. I was like, well, shit, this guy, I mean, he's a great ball striker, right?
Yeah.
And I would notice that the better my players got, the better. So that's why I was so fascinated by the stuff we talked about and what you've talked about here with that getting your bottom and your top on top of each other. Because I would find that the worst those were in line, the worse they hit it.
Yeah. So what did we learn like with Brian Harmon? Like we saw something with Brian Harmon
right.
I'd never seen before. And one of those things is that at impact, the tour players on average, they have the same amount of what's called rib cage turn and rib cage side bend. Or for your listeners that don't know what side bend, it's basically tilting away from the target. So if you're looking face on to your to the player as they're swinging, the target's to your right, the target's to their left. So if you're watching a player hit a golf ball and you're facing them, tilting, so they basically turn the same amount as they tilt with their upper body. And at impact, there's about a 2-to-1 relationship between how much the pelvis turns and how much the torso or rib cage turns. So those are a couple key things. Most amateurs, they tilt more than they turn. And that is a function of the club coming down too steep. However, there are tour players that are very steep. So we need to be careful. But those players, the other thing I've kind of figured out is really nobody on tours, they still have this, even if they're steep, they turn. The steeper you are, the more stuck you get. But they unload, they turn to match that up. So whatever they're trying to do, whether they're hitting a draw or a cut, they match it up. And I will say that the other thing that I've noticed is that players that are steep on tour or shut players, so players that are really close face and players that are really steep or both, they all hit cuts. I don't see tour players ever hit steep draws, or if they are, they're not making cuts and they're fighting.
100%.
So if the club's coming down too steep and you're trying to hit a draw from that position, you basically got to tilt and stop turning to allow the club time to close. And that's a real recipe for disaster that we don't, I have yet to see in all the data that I've captured is steep draws. Tour players, if they're steep, they hit cuts. If they're shallow, they can hit cuts or draws. If they're neutral, they can hit all of them. So it's kind of like, that's something I also see. So for your listeners, it's like, hey, if you're trying to hit a draw and your toe digging and the club's coming down steep and the toe, if you look at your divot and the toe is digging and you're trying to hit a draw, then what you're doing, nobody on planet Earth that nets one penny is doing. And I pointed out net because there are guys that play professionally on mini tours whose dad's paying for them and they actually don't make any money.
That's a different
animal. That's a different animal, right? So if you're netting $1, then you're not hitting toe down draws. There are guys that hit draws that are heel down. Most tour players have the handle down a lot, which I love. You don't see a lot of guys that start low and land high or toe dig. Not a lot of toe digging out there. And most of you amateurs listening, if you took a divot, you'll notice that the toe of the club is digging. And that means the club's coming down too steep and you basically have to wait or stall. You have to wait for the club to get on plane and then you basically lose all that power and performance and, there's no way you're going to turn more. Way you're going to match up the side bend and the turn. It's never going to happen. So this kind of wave of everybody talking about shallowing is actually real, and shallow might not be the right word. There's lowering and shallowing and there's steep and narrow. There's all sorts of funny words that we golf pros like to use. But in a nutshell, what JP was working on with Brian was, he has more turn and more side bend than any tour player we've captured. No thrust, more turn than side bend, and the lie angle delta, meaning that he keeps the handle down, and the guy just friggin' hits it out of the center, and it doesn't move every time.
Yes, he's good.
Like watching paint dry. I mean, it's really impressive to watch him hit balls, but. In JP's case, he was really trying to get that his trail shoulder kind of in a lot of external rotation, getting the club way shallow and way behind him. Well, most tour players have the club way behind them and are very open versus the amateurs. The club's more out in front of them and they're closed. So I've also found that many amateurs think, I suck. I'm a 10 handicap or 12 and I can't do what they do. And I actually believe that's totally wrong. Like 100%. I could not disagree with that more. And I show this to people all the time in Gears. And you should go take a gears lesson, because if you do a couple of drills on gears and show the before and after, you can do everything the tour player can do. You might not be able to do it as fast, but you can hit, just don't play the friggin' tips, you know, play the blue tees instead of the tips,
right,
and get the right positions. And even physically, if you're limited, or, you know, you can still get your body to do most of these actions, I have found. Maybe not at the speed that they do, but in
right,
many cases, you're not, right, don't lose hope.
No.
You can do this. You just have to have somebody that can explain it to you correctly, and somebody that can show you what's really happening under the hood. And I don't know, Tony, I don't know about you. I've had some people, like I did a clinic out at Columbia Edgewater here in Portland, and we put 12 people on. And part of my deal is I do like a before and after. So like I'll show them their swing, then I'll give them a drill, and I'll say, okay, I need more turn here. I need less side bend here. And I'll need the club to lower here a bit more, and I'll do a little practice swing, and I'll capture it, and I'll show them before and after. I'm like, dude, I've tried to do that my whole freaking life, and you did it in 3 swings. I'm like,
yep,
I didn't do that. The visual power of 3D is what really does it, because you can see it. And that is a huge aha moment for golfers. When they can see it, and they can understand it, and they can feel it, then they can do it. But if we're just guessing with a video camera or a launch monitor, you know, who knows? What are we going to do?
Last question. This has been amazing. We've got just a couple minutes, but I want to talk about, there's a lot out there. There's 3D, seems like it's coming out of the woodwork, basically, right?
Yep.
It's everywhere, and it's now done on a single cell phone. I've not done any with it because my brain was like,
yeah,
okay, if I go into that studio at Sea Island, or I go into that studio at Doral, and you got 8 cameras and you've got something on the club, that makes sense to me. Okay. I don't get how you can film something with one iPhone and it gets all of that information. And I get technology improves over time, and I'm sure as your system goes along, like, there's no need to have wires. I'm like, you know, I'm sure everything progresses. But address that. I think that because I have so many people ask me about it, and so to me, if you give a tour player the wrong information or a guess, or you know, or information that's, like you said, it could be X millimeters off. To me, with some of these players, you could do more harm than good. So I just want you to address the accuracy
sure.
issues between 8 cameras and a cell phone.
Okay, so physics becomes a part of that, but. Basically, what you're referring to is markerless technology, and Apple has some new features that allow it to you to create it. And we have been approached by about 15 different markerless companies. Some are actually doing business right now. Some are trying to do business. It's about to be a very crowded. We see that earlier than anyone, and we could do markerless better than anybody because we have more data to throw at it than anybody.
Right.
But the challenge with markerless is the accuracy piece of it. And, you know, you're trying to basically find the joint centers and then recreate a skeleton. And I guess the other problem with, so let's just say it's a consumer grade product that is, it's affordable, and
right.
you might be able to get some help. And I know there's golf pros that find it helpful. So however you want to use that, that's great. The thing that's not going to happen, you know, if it does, it won't happen in our lifetime, is markerless tracking of a golf club throughout the entire golf swing with any kind of like research grade accuracy.
Right.
And people say, well, I don't need research grade. Well, let me tell you something. You kind of do need research grade because that golf club is moving at 110, 20, 30, 40 miles per hour. It's bending in 3 different directions at a high rate, and there are multiple angles to that golf club. So I don't care how much AI you throw at it, there's no way you're going to get
right.
that golf club really, really accurately measured. And like if you put a golf club on a robot and you hit one that's 5 millimeters off center, the ball's like 50 yards away from the one that you hit in the middle. So yeah. 5 millimeters is a freaking mile on a golf club. Mile. It's a mile. Yeah. And so what I'm saying is my stance on this, Tony, to answer your question is that I think the key to properly measuring a golf swing is you need both body and club. Because if you're just using the body, you can use the body, but you can see the club maybe on your phone. You can see it. Maybe that's better than nothing, but it's not going to tell the whole story. You don't know really what the face angle is doing at that particular point. All the launch monitors just give it to you at impact. Knowing what it is throughout the swing and what it does and what it is and what it does, telling the journey, that's what matters in golf, is knowing what it is and what it does with both your body and the club. And so we have to know it. And the challenge of that for us is that it's expensive and you have to be in a building. You know, our system costs $33,000. It's not cheap, and you have to put it in a building. So if your club does not have a building, then you can't use it. It doesn't work. So we're limited in that. But I think what's going to happen is that there's going to be an initial kind of raise of interest on it because it's affordable with markerless. But I think there's so many people trying to do it right now that it's going to get a little bit washed out, and they'll probably get better at it. We could probably do it with 8 cameras pretty accurately. But again, you're just missing that. You might be missing some, cutting some corners here or there. And the golf swings, and you mentioned with a tour pro or a beginner, I think it's just as important to accurately measure a beginner than it is a tour pro. Maybe the tour pro has more at stake, but ask a beginning golfer, or kind of like a 12 handicap, any of your readers, like what they wouldn't pay to become a scratch golfer, you know, or what they wouldn't give for that. And
anything,
you know, we see such dramatic results from gears. I mean, that's the biggest takeaway for me, is that we see dramatic, quick results. And that's the thing that I keep getting back from our customer base and our owners, is that, dude, I just took this dude that never understood this principle and they got it like that. And it's like, I was telling you, like, I honestly have had tour players say to me, dude, I have taken lessons from everyone, and I'm talking like everyone, and nobody ever explained this to me the way that you have. And I'm like, it's not me. It's 3D, because you can see it. You can see it, and you can turn the avatar around. You can look at it. When you can see it in 3D, it's so much more impactful, and you can make the change. And these are some of the top, I won't name their names, but these are like the best professionals in the world. Like the guys that have been on Golf Digest magazine cover, you know, and I literally have tour players tell me, dude, like, nobody's ever explained this to me. Nobody's ever showed this to me. I've never understood this principle. Why does it make sense now? And we have dramatic results before and after on gears. And I'm getting ready to publish a lot of those. I'll give you a quick one. You have time for a quick one?
Yeah, real quick.
No?
We got about a minute.
Real quick.
Yep.
All right. So Cam Smith, right? Before and after gears, right? About 140th tee to green, shots gained tee to green. Worst driver of the golf ball on tour, probably. And we come to find out that most of that is when he's trying to hook it. So on right to left holes, he's awful. On left to right holes, he's actually pretty good. So after we kind of go through the whole thing and explain him what's going on, the very next week, he's 8th in tee shots gained off the tee, tee to green. The first time that's ever happened in his career, literally like a week after PGA Championship, like in between the Masters, like, his coach was like, dude, we got to figure something out. Dude, he lost the Masters with his driver. And he's like, I've got to hit this thing right to left. I've got to hit it right to left. I'm like, actually, no, you don't. You know, like, you're trying to fit a square into a round hole. So after that, you know, he's had a pretty good run since the Masters. You know, he won a major, and he hasn't been below 50th in tee to green shots gained. So, like, you can't really, like, that's a very subtle thing that we found in there, that there's no way you're finding that with a video camera. No way. How that shaft was moving, how it was turning, what his tendencies were, those little subtle things, you know, can really help, not just a tour player, but anybody, a 12 handicapper. It can really help everybody. So
Michael, awesome,
there you go.
Awesome stuff. Great stories, great insight, great look at the windows that people can go through. Thank you for explaining it to me. Thank you for your time. I look forward to picking your brain and learning more. Hopefully I run into you at the PGA show. But look forward to talking and learning more. And thanks for sitting on the tour.
Most important, we're good friends. So from here on out, I love it.
Appreciate it, buddy. Look forward to catching
thanks,
up soon.
Thanks, Tony. Thank you, Tony. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed this edition of The Tour Coach and this conversation that we brought to you about playing, learning, and teaching the game of golf. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Tour Coach. In between now and next week, make sure you follow us on our social channels. You can always find me at The Dew Sweeper on Instagram, or go to our YouTube page where you'll see a scene and a video from my teachings daily on our YouTube channel. You can find that by looking up Tony Ruggiero and The Dew Sweepers on YouTube. Until then, make sure you follow and check out everything Tour Coach and all our sponsors, Srixon Cleveland Golf, Bushnell, Vineyard Vines, and Buick GMC. I'll be back next week to help all of us appreciate, learn, and enjoy the game of golf.